RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
I think it's time to catch up on a few geopolitical matters. And when we want to do that, we talk to Greg Simons. Greg Simons is an assistant professor at Tarība University in Latvia in the Department of Communication Sciences. He's a faculty member, studies propaganda systems and media, communication management and Russian media. He is based, however, in Uppsala, Sweden. Greg, welcome back to RCR.
Yeah, cheers, Paul. Good to be back.
This is not a good one. Your comments first on, well, the BBC are reporting it like this. How Israel's hostage rescue in Gaza unfolded. Kind of sounds like, you know, it was one of these great missions, rescue the poor hostages. There's talk of that pier being involved, the one that washed up on the shore. They've obviously fixed that. So in your understanding, what's happened here?
Well, it's like that occasion, that propaganda moment in Iraq when they rescued that woman US soldier who didn't really need rescuing. I mean, she is in quite fine condition. But anyway, you got some similarities. It's not exactly the whole truth, which is shocking, which they said. Those four hostages were, in fact, military personnel. They were not hostages per se. I mean, if you're being held in a time of war, they're more of a prisoner of war. But the more interesting point in this is that you had this aid, theoretically an aid truck, which left from that American pier in Gaza. When this was seen, it was together with some infantry fighting vehicles. So one already gets a little bit suspicious about all of this kind of constellation of different things at this time. Anyway, they got into a little bit of a scrape in there, obviously some resistance. Why are these vehicles entering this camp in the Gaza? And the Americans, in their truly humanitarian nature, decided it would be a fantastic idea to clear a path. So the truck, the aid truck, we'll put that in commas, could get through. And so, in their infinite wisdom, they bombed a market. It killed 250 civilians, mostly children, to get this aid truck through. And then they got those four prisoners of war. And by the way, the airstrike was not done by the Israeli Air Force. This was done by U.S. aircraft. And so you're having a more direct and overt interaction of the U.S., not only in Ukraine, but now in Gaza as well.
That's going to flip some people out, isn't it? The people on the streets that have been protesting all over.
Yes.
Yeah.
So now that the U.S. is not only covertly and indirectly aiding and abetting genocide and ethnic cleansing, they're doing it openly and directly.
Do you think that was an ordered strike, or is this someone said, God damn it, let's do something, and sort of went over the top?
The fact that this happened so quickly suggests that everything was prepared in advance, because otherwise you have to go up the chain of command and get these things done. It takes time. And this was done pretty quickly, which suggests that all of the organizational and leadership framework was already in place for them to do what they did.
That's helping Netanyahu out, isn't it? Because he has been crowing about this. We won't stop. This won't be over until all the hostages, you've pointed out that they're not really technically that, are rescued. So the US has thrown him a bone, sort of.
Yeah, well, he's deeply desperate. I mean, his whole, not only political career, but the fact that he will lose his freedom as soon as he loses his political power, because he'll go to jail for the crimes which he's committed. I mean, not these ethnic cleansing, genocide, things like this, but corruption and so forth, which they are in the process of waiting for him to make a mistake. And then, yeah, he will change his uniform, so to speak, for something a bit more modest.
So Biden has helped him. Do you think that would have gone to the level of the president, the authorization of that sort of attack on a civilian target, killing 250 people? Because it ain't going to look good. It's not looking good.
They don't care. It's a bit like under Obama when they had those random drone strikes in Pakistan, blowing up different wedding parties and so forth, that they would just tell absolute lies. The X number of mid-level Taliban suspects have been killed in this drone strike, blah, 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 blah. They will play the same stupid thing again. And it's like when they paraded that daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador, and she said about the Iraqi soldiers throwing out the Kuwaiti babies from incubators.
Yeah.
They will just continue this whole sick facade for as long as it takes, because Biden is desperate too. And of course, if he does something to support Israel and the Zionist cause, this won't be forgotten by AIPAC and the lobby there, which are also in a problematic situation because of what they're supporting there in Gaza.
Mm. You just reminded me, of course, there's been the commemoration of D-Day, and Biden was there, and very unusual kind of behavior there. Sunak walked off early.
Yeah,
they really don't know how to honor these events anymore, do they? The culture of the leaders now. Of the collective Western countries.
They have no honour themselves, so why should they show honour and respect for anyone else who is worthy of honour and respect? I mean, it's just showing their true nature. I mean, Biden trying to sit down on that imaginary chair in front of the Macron and his wife. And
what planet was he on?
I think he might have accidentally broken into Zelensky's little personal stash.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And led off by Dr. Jill, you know, in the end.
Yeah, the babysitter, yeah.
And Sunak might have torpedoed his election chances, though he probably didn't have any anyway.
They're out of touch with reality of people on the street. They are so out of touch because they sit in their own little elite echo chambers and bubbles that they have no clue. I mean, it's like Biden keeping the Ukraine war going as a means to aid his election bid. So that is...
I don't know how that works.
No, I'm not sure either, but they've decided upon this as a winning strategy somehow, not to admit defeat until... probably after the election, but...
Where they're going to have to admit defeat in the election too.
Yeah, no. It's, one should say it's a rather, to put it diplomatically, risky strategy.
I'm looking at a piece that I think you wrote in TRTworld.com. It's headed up, Understanding US Version of Red Line and Backdrop of Israel's War on Gaza. What are you talking about there? We hear this term red line often. Seems to be flexible in many cases.
Yes.
People cross red lines and, you know, all the talk doesn't seem to translate to any walk. So what are you saying in this piece?
Well, what I'm saying is the US has not only double standards, but a multitude more times level of hypocrisy, because a red line theoretically is something which a point where an action is deemed absolutely and utterly unacceptable by the party that imposed the red line. And if there is some, if that is transgressed, then there will be, theoretically, a severe consequence for the transgression of that red line. It's a opinion piece which I wrote for, was asked to write for TRT World. And what it shows is that is a very double standard approach, because, I mean, you have these different red lines which the US was imposing on Russia and was imposing sanctions without Russia having actually crossed those red lines. And yet, on this other hand, you've got Israel. Netanyahu is flipping the middle finger as soon as the red line is uttered, and then goes ahead and absolutely violates that red line every way possible. And there is no consequence beyond the continued supply of weapons, and now, from what seems to be the case, direct US military involvement in Gaza.
Okay, so the red line's the cried wolf.
Something like this, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so we won't believe it so much, not that we do, next time we hear that in any sort of pronouncement from the usual suspects. All right, let's move to Europe. And just in the last very short time in St. Petersburg, the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum has been on. There have been lots of people there. I've been watching some of the video from there. And Vladimir Putin has used this event to talk about some significant things. First of all, an alternative to the current international monetary system, where transactions can be done without anything being attached. I can't remember his exact description, but basically free of any meddling, which, of course, I've had a lot of lately. Also, he's been talking about the U.S. presidential election coming up, what the lawfare on Trump, but he said he'll work with anyone. And also there's been talk recently, you know, of the Russians' nuclear doctrine, when it's triggered, and if the firing, if the collective West and Ukraine are firing weapons provided by collective West into Russia, that could trigger it. So where is all that, do you think, at the moment?
Well, I mean, Putin is on the one hand addressing the global south in this forum. And this is where Russia has been heading for at least the last 10 years. I would say perhaps even longer. It's been drifting gradually and then accelerated, of course, more recently. Now, there is also the attempt to get into the heads of those who are subjected to this psychological waterboarding by the so-called free Western world, by the
international laws based order.
Oh, yes. And this is saying, well, okay, you continue to do this, there will be. So this is him drawing his red line, if you like. And there is a tendency to, I mean, not every red line is respected, but to escalate could be much more dangerous than enforcing the red line. And this, I mean, you got these morons in the Western world that think this is a sign of weakness and want to live, they want to make Doctor Strangelove reality rather than something on film.
Feels like that.
Yeah. And I mean, they just don't get it. And of course, you can think, okay, if Russia started supplying some Mexican drug cartels with some sophisticated weapons and said, yeah, and China, and yeah, sure, go for it.
Yeah, fire them into Texas. Go for it.
Yeah, lob them into Texas. Lob them into California, New Mexico, wherever. Go for it. You have our blessing. Can you imagine the bleating which would be done from Washington? I mean, it would be all of a sudden they'd remember international law and rules of war and all these other things which are forgotten. Because, I mean, as you allude to, the so-called quality of the political leadership of the West. I mean, you have the dumbest ones leading the pack, not the brightest ones. And whether it be Sunak, whether it be Macron, whether it be Biden, Scholz, I mean, or these other, well, I think it's polite to call them a cretin. It's probably an insult to cretins, but you have these people walking this strange zombie-like fantasy that they are the West that was in 1990, when there was this clear unipolar order, and the US, in their own terms, in 1991, became the clear victor, if you want to use the terminology. It's no longer the case. I mean, they've been shooting themselves in the foot for a couple of decades. They are no longer the power they used to be, but they still live there. I mean, it's like Sunak and the British. They still think they've got an empire. I mean, they can't even man what's left of their ships. And I mean, if you want to collect the whole British army together, you could fit them in one football stadium and still have thousands of seats left over.
Yeah, in contrast, I see that Putin's also said we don't need to have a call up because 150,000 have volunteered in the last month or so. Yeah. Anyway, so we've got the numbers. The, sleepwalking into it, this is what it sounds like. And, and you know, from what I can see and other commentators I listen to and read, it seems that they all think that Putin is serious. He's serious. What he says is, like, serious. And also, there seems to be, with the Russian military, a huge emphasis on electronic warfare, which will intercept everything, and an underestimation of that by the collective West, and the West on old-style sort of, you know, metal weaponry that sort of hasn't changed in quite a while. So it seems that the Russians may be in a better position in a conflict anyway, yet they sleepwalk into this thing. It's bizarre.
Yes. Well, I mean, this myth of Western weapon superiority has been, for anyone with half a brain cell and functioning sensory perceptions, understands it's been shattered in Ukraine. This myth of these Abrams, these different artillery systems, the HIMARS, all of these things have utterly failed. I mean, even the Ukrainians are complaining about their lack of utility on the battlefield. And, I mean, so, I mean, the idea that the Leopards, the Abrams, the Challengers would are so much superior to Russian armor and would just punch through and blah, blah, blah. Well, this is obviously not true. And, I mean, if you're talking about the latest generation of aircraft, I mean, how many F-35s have been lost in this expensive, overpriced, over-budgeted? I mean, and that's not even enemy combat.
You make a good point, Greg, because it seems that the Western weaponry is made for industrial military complex benefit.
Corporate profits.
Because the F-35 was supposed to be the fighter that did everything. Of course, that's not possible. So, but it was promoted and funded that way, and it's every country, including Australia, that's taken it over, is paying mega bucks for it. And the other thing is, like on the battlefield, those Abrams tanks, they're powered by gas turbines. They require 8 hours of maintenance for every hour in the field. Russians just have simple stuff that works in the most extreme conditions. Again, who could miss that?
Well, Western politicians and military leaders. I mean, coming back to this Dr. Strangelove, you have all of these delusional generals and politicians who live their own fantasy world, which is absolutely divorced from reality. And unfortunately, you have this situation now. I mean, it's like these NATO people who are speaking about all of these coming victories. It's like, in some ways, watching those last moments on Downfall, you know, this German film about Hitler, and saying, well, let's have the final offensive and push back the Bolshevik hordes. We got all of these different military units and equipment on paper. Go forward, you know, and push them back. They live this alternative reality, which is an utter it's fiction, and they live by it. And the problem is that they live in this bubble where, you know, you can't tell the truth, otherwise you'd be cancelled. I mean, it's you're getting...
Yeah, but you could be destroyed in a war. Yes, it's even worse. Yeah,
but they're not thinking that far ahead.
I just can't believe that.
Yeah.
That's what makes it scary.
They'll probably have their own nuclear bunkers for themselves if the eventuality comes, but... Yeah, not so much guarantee for the general public, of course.
Yeah. Do you think Putin's just going to try and tread water as much as he can through to hopefully a Trump victory? Is it that would be the strategy ultimately to avoid things being blown up big time, surely?
No, because he understands there's going to be no real difference whether it's Biden or whether it's Trump. I mean, you'll get... same, but different stupidities. I mean, look what reckless stuff that Trump did when he authorized the murder of General Soleimani at Baghdad Airport. He's doing stupid stuff as well. And he lobbed those Tomahawks, 50 of them, into an airbase in Syria on wrong assumptions. So, I mean, he's as bad as the others. It's just that he's less polished, shall we say, than these other ones. Although, I mean, Biden's far from being polished, but he has this team around him. It's like that hideous one where, I've forgotten what his name was. It's not Kirby. It's the State Department one who said it's okay to kill civilians in a presser. I've forgotten his
name. Yeah. One of the cast of characters. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And he said, oh, it's quite okay. If you got civilians around, it's all right to target them.
Oh, not Sullivan. Was it Sullivan?
No, it's not Sullivan. He's got a bit of a weasel face, this one. I mean, that doesn't tear it down so much.
A whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see also Scott Ritter. That name will be known to many of our listeners for his podcasts and his sort of insight into this conflict, given his history in nuclear disarmament and everything in Russia back in the day. He was heading to that the gathering that I mentioned, and they stopped him at JFK, took his passport, took him off the plane, couldn't give him any answers. And I think he also gave the heads up to other colleagues of his who were heading there as well. Don't bother. So, I mean, there was a reason for that, wasn't there?
Small price to pay for living in a democracy, as they would say. But, he's become too influential. And the last thing they want coming up to an election is the American public to be exposed to anything which uncovers their BS. I think it's already a done deal. It's like this nonsense. They play by facade at the moment, the Democrats. And if you like, I mean, it's like after the indictment of Trump with this kind of weaponization of the law against him as a means to ensure he doesn't get elected. And then, I mean, this has reminded me of the worst practices, blunt practices of any authoritarian state. And they have this opinion poll afterwards, and they say, oh, well, Biden's in the lead now after Trump is indicted on 34 counts, blah, 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 blah. No, it's not. I mean, this is going back to 2016 when they said Hillary was so far in the lead and that she was to be the next president. I mean, she was even celebrating being president until she actually got the news, like, oops. Yeah, I wouldn't have liked to be Bill that evening after that.
No, apparently she hit the liquor.
Oh, yes. Probably a little bit of spousal abuse after that as well.
Yeah, no word from the US on their citizen Gonzalo Lira, who died in custody, and some are saying they're tortured to death. Not one mention. I can't believe that. Can you?
I can, unfortunately, by now. I mean, it's like Assange. What's he been convicted on? Nothing. What's he been charged with? Nothing. And he's been in solitary in medieval conditions for how long?
But clearly, the U.S. State Department must have known he was in custody and was in danger. His life was in danger. They must have known that. So they wanted him dead. They wanted him dead.
Yes, their own citizen, sure. Absolutely. Otherwise, he wouldn't be.
What do you think the chances are of this kicking off into, because it only takes one mistake almost, doesn't it? And suddenly, and I get the feeling that Putin feels he's got the upper hand.
Well, Putin knows he's got the upper hand, but, I mean, he's also intelligent enough to know that the Western leadership is so delusional that they don't necessarily understand that. And they keep on escalating. And the escalation is not based on realistic appraisal of the situation, this kind of rational logic. It's based on an emotional logic that they feel somehow humiliated, that they all of this talk about crushing Russia, you know, how do they call it, decolonizing Russia. I mean, this is all just going into ether. So they act emotionally and irrationally, and they just cannot cope with the actual situation. And this creates a rather deeply problematic case. I mean, World War One was sleepwalked into, but they did not have nuclear weapons at that stage. But still, one can see the carnage that was created. So one can understand. I mean, Putin's very adept and knowledgeable on history, so he understands. I'm not sure if Biden understands anything, I mean, at this stage.
Well, it's fading fast. There's no question about that, any sort of understanding. Would it surprise you, Greg, to know that I'm looking at reporting, well, I'm trying to find reporting of the last weekend's events in Russia, that St. Petersburg event and what came out of it, and also the attack on the killed 250 in Gaza, trying to rescue the hostages. There's no reporting of it in the main media here, as we talk right now. Why would that be? Here.
Because if you tell a lie, there are two different ways of doing it, or to tell something inconvenient. First of all, you can lie by justifying why something happens. You can spin it in a certain way. For example, when you had these jihadists shooting at Damascus University and killing students there, the justification, I think, in the New York Times was, well, now that these rich kids of Assad, that they can experience terrorism which has been done on the Syrian people for so long. So, you've got this nonsense to justify the unjustifiable. The other reaction is you just pretend it didn't exist. You ignore it and lie by omission. And this is what they're doing, because they've got no comeback. I mean, how can you have a comeback, because they've overcommitted and overpromised and it's empty?
Well, here in New Zealand, we've given, I think it's, that we know, $100 million to Ukraine. No one knows for what. I mean, there's no line item. And I've asked the Deputy Prime Minister, Foreign Minister on this show, what's the line item spend on that money? It's our money. What's it being spent on? Holiday homes for Zelensky? I mean, how do we know?
More than likely.
And we've said, you know, on behalf of our government, people think that, you know, we're you know, not favouring Putin in any way. In fact, he's been talked about very negatively by the politicians here. And likewise, I'm wondering, do you think the Israeli lobby that we hear so much about in the US also operates here?
I would suspect so, but I think it would be much lower profile because of New Zealand's place in the world. So to speak. So in terms of investment and return on investment, there's much less to be gained putting money into a place like New Zealand than it does for the US, the UK, etc.
Okay, just to finish up, what do you think the responses will be to that US attack in Gaza, and where Ukraine is at, because they're losing desperately, losing so many people in this conflict. The advance across, I think, 1,000 mile or kilometer front by the Russians is never ending.
Yeah.
It keeps speeding up. In the short time ahead, where do you think both those conflicts will be?
Well, Gaza, it's going to unite the global south like never before, because they see the rules-based order for what it is. At the same time, it's going to split the global north like never before, for the same reasons, because of the hypocrisy, because of the lies, because of the unspeakable things that are being done in the name of humanity. So these are going to be the two reactions, and the US will continue its slide into the dustbin of history. When it comes to Ukraine, they're finished. I mean, the only reason why they're not finished now is because the Russians are sparing their manpower. They're not putting them into this meat grinder like you get from this mainstream garbage narratives. They're actually sparing them. Otherwise, they would do offensive like they did in the Second World War. So, and there's nothing to hit them with. If they get F-16s, they're so outclassed now, and all of these other points, and they're not a game changer like all of the other non-game changers which have been going through. Ukraine will be, well, it already is, a big drain on this political establishment, not only in the US but in Europe, because we're having the EU elections now. This is the last day of the EU elections.
Of course, yeah.
And so you can see the comments like Fico, which were the Slovakian prime minister, which they attempted to kill, publicly speaking out against this Ukraine policy.
And didn't the Danish prime minister get beaten up in the street?
Yeah, I mean, you're getting a lot of public anger because, I mean, these clowns are just blindly, they got this inner slave mentality where they just must do whatever the US demands, no matter how much stupidity is involved, no matter how much danger and risk to them is involved. I mean, you've got what's happening in Ukraine, but you've got the Ukrainianization of the global north for US interests. And it's going to end very badly. And, of course, Russia and China are much closer together. Russia has the best military that it's had in many decades, which now is optimized in terms of its equipment and tactics, which now has experience against NATO-trained troops, NATO equipment, which NATO does not have the other way around. So it's all... how do they say? Shit rolls downhill, and eventually it's going to come to a point where everything collects at the bottom in one big nasty mess.
I think that's probably an appropriate note to finish our chat on, the rolling downhill analogy. Yeah. Greg Simons, thanks for coming back on. Let's see what happens over the next short time, and if there's anything, hopefully you can come back, because we need to, I think, keep reporting this here.
Oh, with pleasure. Yeah, there's nothing like discussing concentrated misery on this level.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.